My name is Eugene, and I'm representing Watoto Child Care Ministries. We're based in Uganda, Africa, and our U.S. office is in Tampa, Florida, and which is where I've come from. And so we're going to go ahead and get started so we don't get out of time, and we're going to open up with a video, and then I'll be sharing a bit more about Watoto.
Thank you.
some time ago in Uganda, it was an evening, a cool evening, full moon, and a group of soldiers were huddled together reminiscing about the past. And one of my colleagues overheard this following conversation amongst those Chinese soldiers. The one said, "This would be a good night to kill." And they all kind of agreed. And he asked his colleagues, his friends, he said, what's your favorite way to kill someone? And another one said, "My favorite way is to grab them around the neck, and they struggle and they struggle. And the best part is when they stop struggling and die, it's just so peaceful." And once again, they all agreed. And while the topic of this conversation makes us kind of twist and discuss, what's most disturbing is that this group of soldiers were teenage boys from Gulu, Uganda, who had been ripped from their homes and forced to serve as soldiers. They were indoctrinated into the LRA in northern Uganda. These are boys who should have been talking about who's going to win the next World Cup, or who could run the farthest or the fastest, or who was the cutest girl in their class. Instead, their dreams were turned into nightmares and memories of the lives that they've taken. In Uganda, it's estimated that 30,000 children have been abducted since the Lord's Resistance Army began wreaking havoc in the area in 1987. And many of us have probably heard the stories and we've seen the movies about all that's taken place there. And maybe we've been just moved enough to attend a rally or buy a bracelet. And those are good things, but the question is now, what are we going to do about it? In Uganda, the fighting has stopped. For the last 5 years, it's been relatively peaceful. But in the wake of all this, there's just a devastated country, and the city of Gulu is just devastated. So what are we going to do? And in this session, I'd like to share with you a little bit about what Watoto Child Care Ministries is doing in Uganda. And I'm going to begin just a brief overview of the entire ministry, and then I'll focus in a bit more on Project Gulu as we go on. Watoto Child Care Ministries is an outreach of a local church in Uganda called the Watoto Church. And the ministry was started in 1994 by pastors Gary and Marilyn Skinner. The church started in the early 80s, and today there's nearly 20,000 people attending and worship on each weekend at the church. But Watoto was started as a compassionate response to the overwhelming AIDS crisis and the children that are left behind as a result. Over 2 million children in Uganda that have been orphaned. And Watoto is a holistic program of meeting their entire needs, educational, physical, emotional, and spiritual needs. The vision of Watoto is to raise the next generation of Ugandan leaders by pursuing excellence in academic and practical skills, integrity and conduct and moral values, so that each child will become a responsible Christian and a productive citizen of their country. Raising up leaders and rebuilding a nation. In many African nations, there's a vacuum of leadership. One of the fundamental problems in Africa is a lack of good, godly leadership. And at Watoto, it's our goal to raise these children up to in whatever area, whatever career that they choose, that they would be a leader in that area, whether they're a taxi driver, whether they're a doctor, a lawyer, or even the president of the country. We want them to conduct their lives with good character, godly character, and integrity. The method that we're caring for children is in children's villages. And there's a proverb in Africa that says it takes a village to raise a child. And it's very true in Africa. The effort of raising a child is a community effort. And this is one of our villages that we have. It's called Subi Village. And down on the left side here are the homes. Each of these homes has 8 children and a full-time foster mom. And they live together like a family. In the villages also have a medical clinic. They have a church. And they also have schools. On the top of the hill here, you can see the schools. In the front, the white homes are teachers' housing. In the back on the left is a primary school. And kind of at the right, in the middle, is our secondary school. This village also contains a vocational school where children who aren't able to go on to university can go through the vocational training and learn a career in carpentry or metalworking or masonry. The girls, there's fashion design and various projects that they can choose to learn. Each of those homes, again, has a kitchen. There's a bedroom for the mom. There's two bedrooms for the children. There's a dining area, a living area, all important tools for creating that family environment that we believe is so important. Here's another view of Subi Village. You can see the homes are built in circles or clusters, we call them, which is really an African-style theme. This is another village that we have under construction. This is called Bira Village. And this is actually visible on Google Earth. Are there any Google Earth fans in here? If you want to see it, see me afterwards, I'll give you the link. But you can see this village on the left are completed homes, and on the right are the ones that are obviously under construction. One of the easiest ways to get involved with our ministry is through child sponsorship, and they're $35 a month, and it's used to cover the cost of the ongoing care of the children for their food, clothing, education, discipleship. And this little girl is my sponsor girl. Her name is Hope. And you'll notice at the bottom are the URLs for each of these categories that you can go to visit the website later just to learn more about it. We also operate a baby's home in Kampala, Uganda. It's a home for infants, for newborns and preemies. Ages 0 to 2 that we care for in the bulrushes. And we also have a second baby's home that's being built at one of the villages that you just saw. And a third one that will be built starting later this year in Gulu in northern Uganda. It's unfortunate that in Uganda people often give birth to a child and feel they can't sustain a child which is aborted, and they actually just abandon them. They'll throw them out along the side of the road or in a trash pile somewhere. And if a good Samaritan is fortunate enough to find them, they'll bring them to either the police station or to our facility where we care for them. We don't know how many children are ever found. Some time ago, I was in Uganda, and I went to visit the local hospital, and just having a child in the hospital is no guarantee that they're going to survive. Went to the hospital, and we saw this image. If you see the masking tape at the top, it says, "I'm abandoned, please feed me." In the hospital system in Uganda, they don't provide they provide medical attention for the child, but they don't provide normal care like food. So if the family is not there to feed the child, it will die. We also have sponsorship opportunities for our baby's home. These are some of the babies that we have right now. We have about 97 babies there. Another view of some of the preemies that we had. We have a long-term plan to build a world-class pediatric hospital in Kampala, in Uganda. And in this hospital, we're bringing together teams of high-class doctors, teams from around the world will come to Uganda and perform procedures. Many of the children in our program have dreams of becoming doctors, and we also want to use this hospital as a vocational training ground and an education system for them. And we want to raise the bar in Ugandan healthcare. All of the homes and schools that you saw in the previous photos were built by volunteer teams that have come from all around the world. And there's an opportunity there for you, if you're interested in going to Uganda, from your church or from your organization or work, you can take a team of people from anywhere from 6 to 36 people, and you can go and build a home or a classroom for the children. Now, the last two areas that I want to talk about are more specific to do with what we're here this weekend about, which is human trafficking. And children are not the only ones in Uganda who suffered. Some of the most marginalized and wounded people in Africa are women. They've been left abandoned and widowed. Many of them are HIV positive. And they're destitute, fearing that their children will join the ranks and the multitudes of children who have lost their parents. Living Hope operates alongside Watoto to restore the lives of these women and to provide dignity for them. And our targeted group is HIV-positive single women, returnees from abduction, in the LRA, and also teenage mothers. And we've already begun to transform the lives of 2,000 children, or women, 1,200 in Kampala and 900 women in Gulu. And the goal is to restore dignity to these women by doing the following items: improving the quality of life by assisting with basic necessities such as food, clothing, shelter, and medical care, providing comprehensive HIV/AIDS care, including counseling and psychosocial support, providing spiritual discipleship, empowering and equipping them with vocational skills that will enable these women to become productive members in their community, and setting them up with self-sustainable income-generating projects using microfinance loans. And in Gulu, we've also begun a production unit where these women are able to come and actually have a job, and they're beginning to make crafts and items like that where they actually earn an income. They're able to pay their own bills. And part of our effort to restore dignity to these people is not just to give them a handout, but to give them a hand up and an effort to care for their own needs, and rather than just depending on someone else. And I don't know if we can fully understand what that's like, because most of us here probably are able to support ourselves, but they're just not being able to earn an income. It's really demoralizing, I think, for people. And so these women are not able to come and earn a pay. They're able to put their children through school, and it's a wonderful opportunity for them. And when this production unit first opened, several of the women came and they brought their children with them. And two of the women that we're caring for in that program are actually former wives of Joseph Kony, who is the leader of the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army. And they came with their children, and so would you believe that we are now caring for Joseph Kony's children in our ministry, which is just, at first it was a little bit unnerving, but it's not their fault, right? So we kind of have a privilege to be caring for these kids. A couple of years ago, our founders, Gary and Marilyn Skinner, were moved with the plight of the people in northern Uganda. And there's been really a disconnect. In Uganda, there's Gulu in the north, and then the capital city of Kampala is in the south. And for many years, for those 20 years, the war was going on in the north, where the Lord's Resistance Army was attacking villages and abducting children and women. And the people in the south were just kind of indifferent to it. They didn't really care. They didn't really go there. They were afraid they'd get eaten. There was a lot of stigma about it. But several years ago, Gary and Marilyn felt really moved to do something about the situation. So Marilyn Skinner went to Uganda to just kind of survey the situation and see what we could do about it. And the original plan was maybe to bring children from Gulu down to Kampala and place them in our villages there. But as she went to Gulu, she felt moved that we should plant a church in Gulu. And so out of the Watoto Church in Kampala, we reached out and planted a church in Gulu. But during that initial visit, she went to visit there, and prior to this, we had what we called an extended family program, where we would care for children, provide assistance to children who were living with aunts and uncles and grandparents, and providing school fees for them to support them. And several of our children in that program were abducted by the LRA. And during this time of considering, do we go to Gulu? What should we do about this? We heard that one of the children had come back, and her name was Irene. And she had escaped and come back home again, back to Gulu. And so Marilyn went to visit with her and to hear her story, and it really just broke our hearts. When the rebels came one evening and took several children, including Irene, they were forced to run to stay ahead of the Ugandan army. And as they ran, they would hit another village, they would attack, they would gain more children. And as they were going, they ended up with about 100 children just running through the bush. And some of the children were very young, 6 years old, 7 years old. And one would cry out and say that she's tired, she needs to rest. And the rebels said, okay, let's go to this tree. They took her to the tree, and in front of the kids, they killed her and said, you'll rest there forever. And then they ran again. And as they were running, another child tried to escape and run off into the bush. And the rebels went after her and brought her back. And they told the other children, no one escapes. And they forced the other children to bite that girl until she died. And they ran again. They reached the rebel camp. And the soldiers, all the men soldiers, threw their shirts into a pile. And they asked the kids, or told the kids, to go pick up a shirt. And the child went and picked up the shirt. Irene was 12 years old when this happened. And whoever soldier owned the shirt that the child picked up became the owner of that girl. And she was forced to carry his equipment, cook his food, service him sexually. So Irene became pregnant and gave birth to a child who later died. And as she was telling this story to Marilyn, they were both crying, and Irene said, "All I ever wanted to do was grow up and become a nurse." And Marilyn said, "Irene, we're going to make sure that you become the best nurse that we can." And today, Irene lives in one of our villages and is completing her secondary school and making plans to go to nurses training next year. And as I mentioned, it became clear that we were to plant a church there in Gulu. So we felt it important, though, not to just to come in and do our own thing, but one of the core principles of the Watoto Church is community. And so we went to Gulu, went to the LC chairman, who's like the governor of the region, and went to him and asked him, or told him what we want to do. "We're going to come and plant a church here. We're going to build a village for kids. What can we do to help you? What do you need?" And I don't think he was ever asked that before. He was a bit taken aback, but he thought for some time, and then he had three things that he mentioned. And the first one is a hospital. He said, "Our hospital in Gulu is in disrepair." We said, "We know how to run that. We provide medical care for our children. Give us the hospital. We know how to do that." The second thing he said is the child soldiers, the children who escape and come back are stigmatized. They're not welcome. Back even in their own families, they're not welcome. And so they're forced to do what? Live in the street, make their own way. We said, "We know how to do that. We're going to build a village. We'll take care of these children." And the third thing he mentioned was prostitutes. In Gulu, as this rebel army would move through, they would, as I mentioned, they would take women to be their servants and sex slaves. And then at will, they would just abandon them. So there was about 900 women living in Gulu that were living as prostitutes and making their living that way. And we said, we know how to do that. We'll take care of those women. And as the meeting ended, he said, "Please don't let us down." He said, "So many NGOs and organizations have come with their cameras. They've taken their pictures and they left us with blankets and sweets." He said, "Do you think we need blankets and sweets?" He said, "We need help." And so we assured him that we're in it for the long haul. And so August 5th, 2007, we launched the Watoto Church in Gulu. And in October of last year, we officially opened the first Watoto Children's Village in Gulu. There are now 72 children living in those new homes with a brand new mom who loves them. The village is located on a plot of land that used to be a tactical training ground by the LRA, but today it's a vibrant village full of hope and promise. Former child soldiers will be given back their future, a great education, vocational training, and trauma counseling. We're setting up an extensive rehabilitation center where former child soldiers and former wives of LRA soldiers can be helped before reintegrating back into the community. Because of the indescribable atrocities that have been committed, I don't think we can really understand and imagine the amount of trauma that the community has felt. It's not just individual trauma, but it's the community as a whole that's been hurt. And so our trauma team, we brought in a professional, that's a couple from Minnesota, they're professional trauma counselors, and they're setting up our trauma rehabilitation program in Gulu. Their names are Carl and Julie Gady, and they would covet your prayers as you think of them. Please, they have a huge task ahead of them. They've already trained 50 volunteers. They've gone through extensive training as trauma counselors. And they're beginning to lay the groundwork for our trauma rehabilitation center in Gulu. And there's a school in Gulu. It's called the LaRue School for War-Affected Children. It was built by the Danish government and given to the Ugandan government to run. It's a beautiful facility designed to bring children in from children who had escaped from the LRA, and instead of living on the streets, they were to come to this school and receive an education. But they had all the hardware but didn't have the software. The school was really not operating well. The government didn't fulfill their promise of an education for the kids. Kids started dropping out of school. And so we partnered with them. We're now providing the education for that facility and also the trauma counseling for those war-affected children, keeping them off the streets. The trauma team is also doing community trauma counseling in the IDP camps that are in Lulu. And these little huts are about 12 or 16 feet in diameter. There's thousands of these throughout Gulu. These are the places where people have fled from their homes and they go to live in these camps for safety. And for some of these people have lived here for 20 years. And that's all they know. They don't have a home to go back to. And the World Food Program and USAID and those organizations have, for many years, were providing food for these camps. And they've slowly stopped that to try to encourage people to go back to their homes and rebuild their communities. But as I mentioned, most people just, they don't have anywhere to go. And we've gone through these camps and we're providing group therapy and counseling for people who have been traumatized by this war. And already we have 2,500 people in these camps that have gone through counseling and training and learned how to forgive. And our program is very much Christ-centered. We believe that people on their own can't just change. It takes the power of Christ working in them to really have true forgiveness and reconciliation. One of the methods of operation for the LRA was to mutilate their victims. And I don't understand why. It doesn't make any sense to me. It makes me mad. But I have a couple of photos. These are actual patient files that of people that we're working with. And I want to ask the gentleman to drop the camera, if you would, please. Just a few more views of the IDP camps here. But this lady's name is Nancy. And she was one who was mutilated by the LRA. They cut off her nose and lips. I don't know why. It's just one of their MOs, what they do. In the Gulu district alone, as it says, there's over 3,000 registered victims of LRA violence that will require medical intervention. And it's estimated that there's probably about 20,000 people across all of Uganda who have been mutilated in some way that need medical attention. Lost ears, noses, lips. They would often strip tires over people and light them on fire. And this young boy who's lost his left hand due to a tire burn. And also in Gulu, we're planning to build a surgical hospital to begin meeting the needs of individuals like the ones you've just seen. People who've been stigmatized by these horrific acts of violence and who feel like they can't go out into society because they feel ugly and they feel like they've been rejected and abandoned. We're providing facial reconstructive surgery for these ladies. In fact, Nancy, who you just saw, has already had her nose rebuilt just a few weeks ago. It's too soon for post-op photos, but it's a very painful process. And again, keep them in your prayers, but we're committed to providing this reconstructive surgery for them to restore their dignity and they need to feel beautiful. They're beautiful people. And it's just a shame what's been done. The surgical hospital will have four operating theaters. This is a proposed drawing of our surgical hospital. We'll have four operating theaters and recovery wards. We'll also have support services such as lab, x-ray, physiotherapy, and pharmacy. And we'll also have on-site housing for doctors and staff, which you see on the left side. We're also negotiating with the Gulu University to donate land for this project. And in return, we'll provide assistance to them with training their medical staff, medical students, as well as our own medical, or Watoto medical students through this facility. And again, we'll have visiting surgical teams from all around the world come to perform the surgeries and extra things that need to be done there. And we've already partnered with several local medical facilities. We've done surgeries such as removing bullets and shrapnel from people, other war-related injuries, penetrating wounds from knife wounds and things like that. And we've already started on the facial reconstruction. In October this year, we'll be hosting the very first specialist plastic surgery team from South Africa, and they're going to be coming to doing about 10 or 15 procedures this fall, and then we'll be followed up by local Ugandan doctors. And We're also going to be rebuilding the Gulu Regional Referral Hospital, which is just the local small hospital that they have. And as I mentioned earlier, the chairman of the area says it's in disrepair, so reconstruction has started on that. And we also have one 20-foot shipping container and one 40-foot shipping container full of medical equipment. It's already on the ground and ready to retrofit that facility as soon as it's available. Watoto's mission is not simply about rescuing as many children as possible, but it's about raising them up to become future leaders who will bring about sustainable change in Uganda. Billions and billions of dollars have been poured into African nations, and often there's so little to show for it. And that's often because there's no buy-in, it's handing out money, there's no change, there's no progress. But at Watoto, we see an Africa that is giving and not receiving, generous and not greedy, lending, not borrowing. But in order for this to happen, there needs to be a change of mindset in Uganda, in all these countries. And we realize that for sustainable change to take place in the nation, it needs to start within our ministry. And so we've begun projects to help our ministry to become self-sustainable. We understand that there may come a day when teams can't go to Uganda. Maybe the funding will dry up, we don't know. But if that happens, we don't want these kids to go back to the streets. We want to create a model where we can actually sustain the ministry should there be some unknown tragedy that would happen. So we have several small agricultural projects already where we're raising produce for consumption within our villages. And in Gulu, we've purchased over 6,600 acres of land, and it's going to become a commercial farming operation where we'll be able to raise produce, timber, various types of produce to sell to the market to actually generate income. And again, we'll also provide a vocational training for many of our Watoto students. And we're teaching Ugandans proper agricultural techniques so that they can grow food with high nutritional value that would also help prevent disease. And this year we're also beginning a fish farm and a goat operation. And the goat operation will actually be, the goats will be milked, and that milk will be used for the baby's home to replace a lot of the formula that we use. Right now we're going through about $20,000 of baby formula a month. And so we're working on ways, and we've learned that goat's milk is more digestible for a baby than like a cow's milk would be. And so we're pursuing that project in the fish farm also for white meat protein for the children. And Uganda is a very fertile and beautiful country. It's green all year. You can grow most anything that you can think of, but it needs to be done properly. We're actually developing a new village model where each of those clusters of homes will be assigned a 6-acre parcel of land, which they'll care for themselves. They'll grow their own produce. They'll have some livestock, some cows, some chickens, some goats. They'll do rotational grazing and planting to care for the land. We'll teach them proper animal husbandry. And one of our other projects in our effort to become sustainable is a guest house. And this is one of them that just opened this week. And we actually have our own staff running this home. And this is a facility where we'll host our Visit Africa teams that come to Uganda. They'll stay in this facility, and it'll be staffed by our Watoto students are in hospitality training, and this will also generate income. The teams that come will pay to stay there, and will also generate income for our ministry. And around the Watoto Church building in Kampala, there's the way it's located, it's in about a full city block, and around the building there's small shops that have been operating. We've leased them out for years. And last year we served eviction notices to all those stores and asked them to leave. And we're now putting in our own stores that are going to be operated by Watoto, will generate income for Watoto, such as a hair salon, a coffee shop, a library, and things like that. And the goal, again, as I mentioned, the vision of our ministry is to operate with excellence. And each of these businesses, we want to be leaders in whatever line of business it is, whether it's a coffee shop or whether it's a doctor's office. We want to operate with integrity and show the culture, show the community that if we can operate with integrity, we can make a change. And in Uganda, there's such a mindset that you know, nothing's ever going to change. This is the way it's always been, and there's just nothing we can do about it. But we believe that there is something we can do about it, and we want to do that through these businesses and just to begin to encourage people to live their lives with honesty, with integrity, that would honor Christ. We also, I mentioned the vocational school that we're operating. There's a lot of the children that come into our program, they may come in at the age of 10 years old and have never gone to school. And so it's unlikely that they would go on to university. So we've started the vocational training program where they can learn the trades that I mentioned. And now we're also, through that program, we're producing all of the furniture and like the school desks and the beds, the chairs and everything for our homes and schools are all being produced within our own ministry. They also make the metal windows and doors in all the homes. And we have a long-term plan as well to begin at Watoto University in Kampala. And the goal is to begin be able to care for children from birth all the way through university until they're established and begin their careers. And as a, kind of the first step to that, we've started this year what's called Watoto 360. And this is an intense discipleship training program for college-age students, 20-somethings in there. And this will be in Uganda. It's going to be a 5-month semester of intense training and discipleship. And this entire ministry model that we have, the villages, the schools, the church, we have plans to replicate it all across Africa. And it's already started. A church in South Africa has picked up this model and they're developing a Watoto village in South Africa. But through this Watoto 360, we're going to provide training and discipleship to people and then send them out in teams to help begin villages like this all across Africa. We believe that in Uganda, our goal is 10,000 children. But we believe that by partnering together with 10,000 churches around the world, we can rescue 2 million children all across Africa. Can you imagine the potential that lies in 2 million children who have been trained according to godly principles, raised in a loving home, and we really have high hopes for these children. It's going to change not just their own communities and countries, but the entire continent. There's a verse in Psalms 113, verses 5 to 8. It says, "Who can compare with God our God, so majestically enthroned, surveying his magnificent heavens and earth?" In the last few weeks, there's been news about the Hubble telescope. They're going now to repair it. In fact, they're probably doing it right now, repairing this Hubble telescope in space. And they've seen the pictures about these distant galaxies. They have a photo, and in the photo, there's thousands and thousands of galaxies. And yet God is there surveying all of this. The next verse in Psalms, it says, "He picks up the poor from out of the dirt, rescues the wretched who've been thrown out with the trash, seats them among the honored guests, a place of honor among the brightest and best." So here's God, our great big God, who's created everything that we see, the galaxies, the heavens, and yet he hears the cry of a snotty little child who's been thrown in the ditch, because he's God of heaven, but he's also the God of the ditch. He owns it all. And when we really begin to understand how much God loves us and loves those who are hurting, I think we begin to better understand the meaning of holistic ministry, and it's pretty simple. God loves them, and so should we. And I want to share a little bit about my story and how I've came to work with Watoto. I used to be a contractor in Ohio. I was building homes. I had my own business. I was a design-build company, and I was doing custom homes. And a few years ago, the Watoto Children's Choir, anyone heard the Watoto Children's Choir? All right, they came to our church in Ohio several years ago. And after that visit, some of the men from our church decided to take a team to Uganda to build a home for these children. And being a builder, I thought, well, I can do that. I know how to build a house. I can go lay a brick, and it'll be a 2-week mission trip. And so we went, my wife and I went on that team. And while we were in Uganda, we found that we saw the ministry, we began to really fall in love with it and begin to understand what it's all about. And I was also serving as a worship leader at our church in Ohio, and one of the men from our was a Watoto staff member that was traveling with us knew about that, and While we were there in Uganda, he came and asked me, he said, Eugene, would you consider leading one of the Watoto children's choirs? And, you know, come to Uganda and train with them. And in my heart, I was like, oh, yeah, I want to do that. But I did the proper Christian thing. I said, I'll pray about it. And that was in January. And so we went home and prayed about it. But inside my heart, I was like, I want to go to Uganda. This is what I just felt. The moment he said it, I felt, that's what it is. That's what God wants me to do. And yet we prayed. And the question was what to do with the business. I had a successful business going and was making nice money. And July 4th weekend, we're driving from Ohio to Illinois to be with my wife's family for July 4th weekend. And I get a call on my cell phone from a guy in Colorado. He says, I hear you're thinking of going to Africa. I said, what are you going to do with your business? I said, well, I'm not sure yet. I said, I'll either sell it or just shut it down or hire someone. I don't know what I'll do. He said, well, we want to move to Ohio at the end of the year and to be closer to our family. He's like, I really like to have a contracting company. He said, would you sell the business? And I said, absolutely. And so December 31st of that year, we sold the business to him. And some people thought it was a little bit strange that I would do that. Some of my subcontractors were like, are you okay? And I said, yeah. And 1 year later, the housing market collapsed, and I looked like a genius, but it wasn't my decision, right? It was God leading me. I look back over my life, and I see how God has led and directed my steps, and I'm so thankful that he did. And I don't regret it, absolutely don't regret it. And for 2 years, we would live in Uganda for 5 months, training with the choir, and then we'd go touring around the world for 6 months. And we did that 2 times. We went back to Uganda for the 3rd time to train in the choir, and our U.S. Board of Directors called us and said, would you come back and run the office in the U.S.? We said, yes, we'll come back. And so that's where we are today. But it's all because of what God has done and how he's led us. And a lot has been said, and Pastor Francis and others have talked about stepping out in faith and doing the things that we're called to do. And a lot of times we make excuses about, like I mentioned earlier, we have to pray about it. And there's some things that are not praying issues. God has called us to love our neighbor. That's not a praying issue. If your neighbor's hurting, you don't have to pray about helping them. You do it. You've already been called. And that was just a challenge in my life to really step out in faith. And I'm not starved. I'm not in any kind of hardship. God has blessed us, and we're trying our best to serve him and be faithful to him. But if you're feeling that calling in your life, trust him and follow the call.